This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Senate Committee on Agriculture and Natural Resources, 20th of February, 1987.
Senate Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the members present. The others are excused. I would like to first open a very brief work session on Senate Bill 180. Senate Bill 180, as you remember, is the bill relating to the Board of Medical Examiners and, the Board of Veterinary Examiners. And basically, there have been a number of changes that have been brought to us to try to improve the bill. Those are contained in Legislative Council Senate Bill 180-2, not dash 1, but dash 2. And those amendments do three things.
Six things, okay.
We had a problem with the deletion of the language on page 2, lines 19, 20, and 21. Turned out that they really didn't want to delete that, so that language is restored. That's current law. We delete the proposal for new language in lines 22, 23, and 24, which has to do with those who artificially inseminate livestock. And whether or not, if by deleting the language, we're not encouraging them to do pregnancy tests. Then, in addition, there is language that was brought to our attention by Mr. Bennett, representing the chiropractors, the concern of a number of the chiropractors specifically, but probably other health professionals as well, that this bill seemed to be giving them the authority to work on animals when their own scope of practice didn't allow them to do that. So there's language that we spoke about at the hearing in the amendments that basically says if their scope of practice allows them to practice on animals and they are referred by a veterinarian to do that, then they can do so. And then there's an additional amendment, which I think Senator Olson wanted to speak to, that's come on forward, Bill, that is contained in the dash 2 amendments, lines 12 through 15, that has to do with people. I have one on the coast called Free Flight. I'm sure Senator Olson has some, where they do rehabilitation on wildlife. And we didn't want them to be considered in violation of this act because they continue to rehabilitate wildlife. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Bill Olson. I'm the state senator from District 25, Jackson and Josephine counties. I'd like to draw your attention, if I could, for a moment to Senate Bill 180-2 Legislative Council Amendments, and in particular address my comments to lines 11 through 17 of those amendments, which would ask that on page 3 after line 2 to insert the following language, sub 11, this chapter does not apply to persons permitted by the Department of Fish and Wildlife to rehabilitate orphaned, sick, or injured wildlife as defined under ORS 496004 for the purposes of restoring the animals to the wild. And again, to those particular sections, as you alluded to, Mr. Chairman, in our area we have Dave Siddons' Wildlife Images, which has been purposed to find those animals from swallows to bald eagles and every other form of wildlife that they possibly can, who have been injured or left perhaps uncared for, and restore them to their natural habitat. It's been a tremendous resource, not just in southwestern Oregon, but internationally now. Some of these animals have come from forest fires and other situations, and the care and treatment they received there, of course, is performed as necessary by veterinarians who volunteer their services, and in those follow-up services by other trained personnel, they are from time to time unable to restore the wildlife to their natural habitat. They then become part of a traveling educational program that allows other folks in particular metropolitan areas to see what's actually out there in the woods and why we should protect those animals. And so I would ask that the committee favorably consider these amendments, which I believe will take care of their particular concern. You will also hear from the Oregon Health Sciences Center some concerns that they have, perhaps additional language which would do the same, but there may be certain kinds of endangered species and so forth which are specifically by Fish and Wildlife signaled out for care and treatment and restoration to their natural habitat that affects wildlife images and not perhaps other broader educational nonprofit organizations. So again, I'd ask the committee favorably to consider the amendments in 180-2, which I alluded to.
Any questions for Senator Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
These amendments came both from Senator Olson and from myself, because I have, as I said, a wildlife rehabilitation person in the coast who wanted to make sure he continued to rehabilitate hawks and seals and other critters from the beach.
Wasn't there a write-up about that?
I think there was, actually, Senator Kintyre. Uh-huh. Yeah. So that is that set of amendments, and then we do want to hear from Lois Davis from the Oregon Health Sciences University, who has a who also has another amendment, and I'll let you speak to that, but it seems like a very reasonable amendment to me.
Yes, for the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Lois Davis. I'm assistant to the president of Oregon Health Sciences University. In looking at the bill, although in discussions with staff, it's my understanding that the intent is not to affect the Health Sciences University, but based on the way it's written, we're concerned that our people, we have students, we have research associates, we have research assistants, faculty, physicians, nurses, dentists, all involved in activities that under Section 2, I believe, if this bill is passed, would constitute the practice of veterinary medicine, and they are not licensed veterinarians. And for that reason, we wanted to, on line 17, page 2, after the word person, insert a phrase that would read, or to a nonprofit, educational, or research organization. And again, more specifically, our concern there, although you exclude animals belonging to a person or to a business that employs the person, in our case, the animals at Health Sciences are not owned by the individuals, they're owned by the institution. We are not, by legal definition, a business. We're a nonprofit educational and research institution, and therefore, and many of our people, such as students, are not even employees of ours. So we're concerned, and I would urge that you accept the amendment to cover that.
Any questions for Ms. Davis?
I just want to make sure that it reads so that it makes sense. So long as there are no violation of this particular ORS site, nothing in this chapter shall be so construed as to prevent any person performing acts that constitute the practice of veterinary medicine. Veterinary medicine, surgery, or dentistry in a humane and competent manner on any animal belonging to the person or to a business that employs the person or to a nonprofit educational or research organization or as gratuitous services on food production livestock. Too many ors in that sentence.
Yeah, I would agree, but that's legislative counsels.
I think we should get that sentence run. I have no problem with the amendment. I think we should get that run through council to approve it.
Mr. Chairman, my guess is you can put a comma or that you can, I'm not sure you need the last or in the amendment.
Yeah.
But.
Okay. Which one would be the last or?
Between educational and research.
Oh, so it would be to a nonprofit educational comma rather than educational research organization.
It doesn't matter.
It
depends on what you want to do. If you want to include them, you put a comma there probably.
Put a comma, yeah. So
which
delete
means
the...
Which you can't be both.
Okay.
You could be both. You could be... By putting a comma in, you could be an educational institution or a research... You could be a research institution, and either one would qualify you. If you take the or out and you don't put a comma in, and I can be wrong, it seems to me you have to be an educational research institution, which
right.
is not what we want to say here, because we want to make it include both educational institutions and research institutions and those who call themselves.
Yeah, correct.
I think the comma would be okay, but you need to check legislative counsel.
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
All right.
At least that's the intent.
Any further questions for Ms. Davis?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and what would be the committee's pleasure on the Legislative Council Amendments 180-2?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Legislative Council Amendments 180-2, and I guess I would also move the amendments that are just presented to us by, labeled by Oregon Health Science University dated February 20th.
With the deletion of the or in line 2 and the insertion
of a
comma.
Right, now, Senator Cairns just asked me.
Mr. Chairman, I think if you do that, you then have one entity, which would be known as a nonprofit, comma, educational profit, comma, research organization.
Right.
So instead of having two, you've now collapsed it to one entity. But
right.
You need that or. You do it to a
nonprofit,
comma, educational, comma, or research organization. You then have three entities.
Could we adopt these amendments and then authorize the chair to just run it through council to get it to meet our intent and get it cleaned up so that it says what we want it to say?
You want all three?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay, Senator Cohen has moved the adoption of the amendments LC 180-2 and the adoption in concept of the amendment brought to us by the Oregon Health Sciences University. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. What's the pleasure?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brenneman.
At hearing the other day, the veterinarians asked that lines 22 and through 24 on page 2 be taken out. Did we do that?
That's what we just did with the adoption of the dash 2 amendments.
Oh, that's the dash 2.
And we restored lines 19 through 21 and deleted 22 through 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. I would move Senate Bill 180 to the floor as amended with the due pass recommendations giving the chair authorization to put the or back in or put a comma in with a full understanding that we're going to pass it by Legislative Council.
Okay. Senator Cohen moves Senate Bill 180 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Call the roll, please.
Senator Brenneman.
Aye.
Senator Cohen.
Aye.
Senator Hamdy.
Aye.
Senator Cairns.
Aye.
Senator Kintai.
Aye.
Senator Bradbury.
Aye. Motion is adopted. Is anybody just dying to carry this bill? Senator Olson can carry the bill. That was his phone. We'll figure that out. Would you carry? Okay. Senator Brenneman will carry the bill.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you said.
Okay.
Thanks.
Want to open the public hearing on Senate Bill 122, which is the state superfund, so-called superfund bill. Mr. Green, can you give us a little background?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In October of 1986, the federal government passed a new Superfund law which provides for state governments to take a much larger role in the cleanup of hazardous waste sites. Senate Bill 122 would establish a state fund for the cleanup of contaminated sites as well as the cleanup of contamination from leaking underground storage tanks. Besides establishing this fund, the major provisions of the bill are: the bill allows the Department of Environmental Quality to do site inspections and take remedial action or to contract with private parties to do inspections or take remedial action. The bill requires the Environmental Quality Commission to establish cleanup levels at sites. The bill increases the per-ton fee on hazardous waste going to the Arlington waste site from $10 to $20. This money will go to an existing state super fund matching fund. The bill establishes a new fund for the cleanup of leaking underground storage tanks. This fund would be generated from a fee on rust owners, which would be set by the EQC. The bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Hansen and whoever else you want to come with you.
Thank you.
Oh boy. I needed some more room.
Okay.
I think they're getting thinner as time goes on.
I don't agree with you, but that's okay.
I'm sure most of this is...
We grade by weight.
As long as the higher grade gets the bigger weight. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Fred Hansen, Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you regarding Senate Bill 122. Today, with me also is Al Goodman, who is the manager of our Remedial Action Section, and we're very pleased to have Al with us because he's really on loan on a what they call an intergovernmental personnel action from EPA. Dan Cooper, who, by the way, is the chair of our Remedial Action Advisory Committee, is also here and would like to have a chance to be able to address the committee on several items at the end of my testimony. Let me deal specifically with the bill itself. Senate Bill 122 would provide that the state of Oregon with the capability to investigate and clean up sites contaminated with hazardous chemicals, including contamination caused by leaking underground tanks. This bill includes three major provisions. First, it authorizes the department to oversee or conduct investigations and cleanups of contaminated sites which are not eligible for the federal Superfund cleanup monies. Second, it would authorize increased fees to provide financial support for the state's conduct and oversight of these site investigation and cleanup activities. Three, it enables the department to carry out the responsibilities established for states under the reauthorized Federal Superfund Program, SARA, the Superfund Amendments and Reauthorization Act, including assessing the new leaking underground storage tank, LUST, cleanup fund. In today's world, we enjoy many consumer products which make our lives easier and more pleasant. The production and use of many of these products, however, carries some human health and environmental risk. Many products we use, such as gasoline, household cleaners, and pesticides, contain hazardous substances. In addition, hazardous substances are used in the manufacturing of a number of consumer products. In 1985, more than 42 million pounds of hazardous waste were generated in Oregon. Unfortunately, some hazardous substances were improperly used or disposed of in the past. These substances can pose a variety of health risks. Again, they are detailed in Attachment 1. As examples, Senate Bill 122 addresses the legacies of past improper waste handling and hazardous substance disposal practices by industrial and commercial activities in Oregon. Let me point out, by the way, that as this is aiming at past practices, the whole concept of the hazardous waste program, the RCRA program, the amendments under HSWA and all that, is aiming prospectively to ensure we don't have these problems in the future. But because there are the past practices, this aims to be able to deal with those problems. This bill would allow us to embark upon a systematic effort to, one, identify sites where contamination is or may be present. Two, to conduct preliminary assessments of the threats to public health, welfare, safety, and the environment posed by these sites. Three, to perform comprehensive site investigations at site where contamination is suspected or confirmed. And fourth, to undertake the cleanup at those sites where the responsible party is bankrupt, insolvent, cannot be identified, or is otherwise unable or unwilling to carry out the necessary cleanup actions. Senate Bill 122 is a needed complement to Oregon's existing hazardous waste management program, authorized by EPA under the Federal Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. Our base RCRA program sets out proper methods for managing hazardous waste generated today and in the future, as I indicated. It does not, however, in most cases, address past practices. Senate Bill 122 would. Beginning in 1980, the EPA, acting under the Federal Superfund Program, has maintained a list of sites which either are confirmed to be contaminated by hazardous substances or due to known past commercial or industrial activities at the sites are strongly suspected to be contaminated. This list has grown as more and more sites have been identified. Currently, more than 200 Oregon sites are on EPA's list. Please note that although some of these sites clearly are contaminated, others are listed for study not because of known contamination, but because a business which was located on the property, for example, is the type of business which historically and nationwide have resulted in contaminated sites. copy of the current list is included as attachment 2. That is that current list of over 200 that we've identified here in Oregon. To date, EPA and DEQ have conducted preliminary assessments at 154, or about 75% of these sites. Of these 154, EPA has concluded that no further action is necessary at this time for 59 sites. However, site investigations are pending or underway at the remaining 95 sites. Additionally, more than 50 sites await even the preliminary assessment to determine what potential health hazards exist. Under the Federal Superfund Program, EPA uses a National Priority List, NPL, as the basis to allocate federal monies for site investigations and cleanup. A site has received a preliminary assessment may then be evaluated by EPA for exposure pathways using a hazard ranking system. The site is assigned a score which is intended to reflect the relative degree of public health and environmental threat posed by that site. EPA has determined that a score of 28.5 on a scale of 0 to 100 is required for a site to be nominated to the National Priority List. NPL sites then become eligible, first, let me stress, to be able to identify a responsible, potential responsible party to be able to clean up, and then, if not, to be eligible for the Federal Superfund cleanup monies. As of January 1987, approximately 950 sites have been placed or are proposed for inclusion on the National Priority List. Again, this is nationwide. There are four Oregon sites on EPA's National Priority List. Gould Battery in Northwest Portland, a battery recycler and processor. Martin Marietta, aluminum producer, principally from potminer cyanide contamination. United Chrome Products, Corvallis, principally chrome but other heavy metals. And Teledyne Huacheng. I should note that United Chrome is the only site that is, in fact, potentially going to be utilizing the federal Superfund dollars. In the other sites, we have responsible parties. Recently, EPA, meaning the last 2.5 weeks, has proposed to add a fifth Oregon site, Allied Plating, which again is in North Portland, to that NPL site. It is my opinion that the majority of our state sites will not qualify as a national priority, meaning that they will not rank 28.5 or above. This does not mean, though, that there are no significant public health or environmental hazards at these sites. It merely means that federal cleanup funds are and will continue to be limited to the worst sites in the nation and will not apply to those Oregon sites. Senate Bill 122 would allow the state to ensure that needed investigations and cleanups at non-national priority listed sites are promptly initiated and carried out to completion. Let me stress that the promptness is important because not only does it mean that the public health is better protected, but because hazardous contaminants will in fact migrate, it means that the costs of cleanup are substantially less the quicker and the earlier contamination is found and cleanup is taken. At many sites, we expect a responsible party will conduct the remedial actions. In these cases, DEQ oversight will be needed to ensure that proper monitoring techniques are used, that qualified personnel are employed, that data gathered is valid, complete, and representative of the site conditions, that state cleanup requirements are identified, cleanup alternatives are given due consideration, and appropriate cleanup action is selected, carried out to completion, and monitored for effectiveness. This complete process from site discovery through monitoring of the cleanup system can take from 2 to 5 years or more. There are contaminated sites, however, where the responsible party is bankrupt or financially insolvent and therefore incapable of or unwilling to undertake the site investigation. Senate Bill 122 would allow DEQ to conduct the investigations and cleanups at these sites and then pursue cost recovery if possible. I mentioned earlier that this bill would also address the problem of contamination caused by leaks of hazardous substances from underground storage tanks. As you know, the department has proposed a separate bill, Senate Bill 115, that you heard on Monday, that deals with a compliance and permit program for operating underground storage tanks. This USP program would be similar to our hazardous waste RCRA program, in that it would regulate prospectively. Let me stress a couple of points that came from that earlier testimony on Senate Bill 115. One is that national studies have shown that corrosion of steel tanks is a significant cause of underground tank leaks. The average age of tanks at the time of failure was 17 years. The majority of tanks were steel tanks. Again, remember that the in Oregon, the average life or the average age of tanks is 13.4 years currently. Information being gathered, again, on the tanks in Oregon indicates that about 79% of Oregon's 23,000 underground tanks are constructed of unprotected steel. Again, the average age of tanks, I said, just about 13 and a half years. And then third, that many of Oregon tanks are approaching or have exceeded their expected lifespan. Our data shows that some of these are leaking now, and that we believe that the number of failures will increase in the future. A problem is real and needs to be able to be addressed. Senate Bill 122 would allow the state to begin to conduct and oversee investigations and cleanups of leaking tanks in addition to other types of hazardous substance contaminated sites. A little bit of background. As you may recall, the 1985 Legislative Assembly took a first step towards addressing the cleanup of abandoned or uncontrolled sites contaminated with hazardous substances. House Bill 2146, passed by the legislature, created a CERCLA, that's the Superfund acronym, for a matching fund which would provide the required state match for federally funded Superfund cleanup sites. The first approved expenditure was for the required, at that time, 50% state match for cleanup of the United Chrome product site in Corvallis. Federal Superfund law required that a match from state revenues be used to be able to match the federal grant. At publicly owned sites, land on which the site was located, required a 50-50 match, all others 90-10, 90% federal, 10% state. The new Superfund Reauthorization Act has that all at 90-10. But as I say, at this time, when authorized, it was 50%. The CERCLA matching fee was established as a source of revenue for this fund. And the CERCLA matching fee was set at $10 per ton of hazardous waste disposed of at Arlington, at the Arlington Hazardous Waste Disposal Site. In addition, House Bill 2146 provided that up to 15% of the CERCLA matching fund could be used to investigate potential Superfund sites. By the way, let me stress here that that $10 per ton fee at Arlington is for all waste disposed of at Arlington. Approximately 20% of the waste received at Arlington come from Oregon businesses. The remaining 80% come from other states in the Northwest Compact. These provisions of House Bill 2146 were an important beginning. They established a foundation for ensuring that federal cleanup funds available to Oregon for national priority list sites actually could be used by providing a revenue source for the state's matching share of the cleanup costs. By the way, I am pleased to be able to report to you that EPA recently began design of the groundwater treatment system for the United Chrome Products site. Installation of the cleanup system is targeted for later this year. During the past several years, as more contaminated sites have been uncovered, the department has attempted to conduct site investigations and oversight of cleanup within existing resources. Negotiations with potentially responsible parties have become protracted in a number of situations as the parties attempt to avoid accepting responsibility for the costs of investigations and cleanup. In some cases, as in the Joseph Forest product site near Enterprise, which is threatening the drinking water supplies of Enterprise, our negotiations were not successful and led to declarations of bankruptcy rather than signed cleanup agreements. And in fact, the bankruptcy ended up in a potential foreclosure by a financial institution of the property. Foreclosure did not proceed because the financial institution determined that they would be accepting liability for the cleanup and chose not to be able to take that property. That property is now in limbo, neither being paid for, nor is it been reclaimed by the financial institution who holds the mortgage. Also, site investigations are more comprehensive, principally due to the heightened concern over hazardous substances and the need to determine the full extent of contamination and potential health hazards associated with a site. Consequently, DEQ oversight of site investigations has become more resource intensive. Our existing resources and authorities have become inadequate to ensure that the known abandoned and uncontrolled sites can properly be investigated and cleaned up. In September of 1986, I appointed a Remedial Action Advisory Committee to assist the department in developing recommendations on strengthening the state's capability in cleanup of contaminated sites. Committee membership includes representatives of industry, technical experts, local government, environmentalists, and the public. Full listing is in Attachment 5. I want to point out that three representatives of the UST Advisory Committee, again, that's the Underground Storage Tank Advisory Committee, also are members of the Remedial Action Advisory Committee. This is to ensure that an integrated approach to remedial action be developed which addresses both leaks from tanks as well as other releases. Many issues have been identified, discussed at length, and appropriately resolved by the committee. This is not to say all issues are resolved. Senate Bill 122 represents the department's proposal for developing the state's capability to protect the health of its citizens and quality of the state's environment from the threats posed by contaminated sites and leaking tanks. Our experience to date has shown that federal cleanup funds will not be available to address the majority of Oregon's contaminated sites. Consequently, Senate Bill 122 proposed to expand the uses of the CERCLA matching fund beyond just providing the state match. That expansion is to include the following: site assessments, remedial investigations, soil, water, and air sampling and analyses, groundwater investigations, feasibility studies, risk assessments, community relations and citizen participation activities, because that's a key part of making sure that the cleanups are understood and accepted by the communities in which they occur,